Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this is a news story that I think needs to be getting more attention because of what it says about kind of how South Africa treats people and how our politics works. So, as anyone who's followed the news will know, there's been a lot of discussion about all sorts of symbolism and court cases involving President Jacob Zuma and whether the VA's flag burning ad was a good or a bad thing. But at the same time, some really unfortunate and horrific things are going on in parts of the country, and they're just not getting the attention that I think they deserve. So this is an example. There has been an eruption of violence in Limpopo between ANC and EFF supporters around Sesheho, which is, I believe, where Julius Malema comes from in Limpopo, on the outskirts of Polokwane. The ANC was attempting to do a door-to-door campaign in this area that is referred to often as Juju Valley because it's where Julius comes from. And it's a stronghold of the EFF. And apparently, there was an eruption of gunfire where EFF supporters alleged to have shot the ANC. And I think there was also accusations that the ANC returned fire. Now, none of the people firing seems to have been hurt, but a young girl, well, I think she was 9 years old, was shot in the head. Luckily, she seems to have survived, but she was definitely injured during the shooting. The EFF and ANC leadership in the province have both called for calm, saying that there needs to be, you know, proper respect for the rules of law and that everyone needs to calm tensions. The ANC, however, said that the injury of the young girl is very much the fault of the EFF, and they're putting all the blame on them and saying that they were the ones who started all of this and that they must take the blame because they were attempting to create, in the ANC's words, a no-go area. Now, we don't know exactly what the facts of this case are, but it's clear that this is completely, completely unacceptable and undemocratic behavior from some of the country's largest political parties. This unfortunately fits into a trend. There's been a report published by the Global Institute Against Transnational Organized Crime, which says that political murders are a significant feature of South African life. There were at least 31 in 2023 and slightly more than that in 2022. And so far this year, there have been at least already 10 political murders, possibly more, because it's not always clear when a murder has been conducted for political reasons. Chris, what do you make of this story? I think that this is the kind of story that really should get a lot more attention in our sort of commentary and political space, because this is quite frankly outrageous.
I think it's a stark reminder, not that people should need reminding, especially commentators and analysts, of the lived reality of very many South Africans, where that level of violence and crime, it's just something that they have to factor in and deal with. You've had over the years, as economic growth has somewhat remained the same level but has declined, you've had an increase in violent protest action. But as you've had also the decline of the police services, their capacity to deal with things, not everything is reported. So there might also be, depending on the sort of media you consume, the area, the circles in which you move, if you can afford things like private security, etc., then perhaps there's an element of where you sort of lose sight of those things. Also, another thing to consider is the increased stakes in our politics, how things become more violent. So again, if you've got higher unemployment, more desperation, one of the ways for you as an individual to get ahead, to take care of your family, or people around you, is to get involved in politics and get part of those sort of political connections, tenders, et cetera, et cetera. It raises the stakes of being involved in politics. So I'm not saying it'll always result in this kind of thing, this sort of tragedy, but it increases the possibility that there's more tension, more violence, as you have people competing for that particular political control. So one shouldn't need these sorts of reminders. You shouldn't need these kinds of events to remind you of how things are proceeding for very many South Africans in the country. But yeah, I think this sort of thing, it won't be the last of the sort of event, I think.
Unfortunately not. I do think that we have actually been lucky in some ways, particularly in KZN, with the incredible amount of political competition in that province between particularly the ANC, MK, and IFP. I suppose also the DA now, because all those parties seem to be doing relatively similarly in KZN, according to polling. There has been, I think, not nearly as much violence as I perhaps feared there might be at the beginning of the election campaign. But still, I think the fact that this story is not a national scandal in the way that so many of our other stories are, is indicative of how out of touch so much political commentary is in this country with the actual needs and desires and threats that many South Africans suffer from. Apparently, when something happens off in Limpopo, no one seems to care, whereas people really should. Anyway, let us go on to our next story. And this is a story, I think it was from yesterday. 702 held this election hall, this election sort of town hall in Soweto, where various political parties and their activists and also some Soweto residents got to debate a number of issues in the country. We talked yesterday about how they had the ANC representative there had said that the ANC could be trusted on NHI and that there wouldn't be theft of the funds, which was a concern raised by some of the people there. Another thing that came out of that was a discussion by the people in attendance of the unemployment rate in South Africa, which is, of course, one of the highest in the world, at 42% on the expanded definition. And the ANC spokesperson there, Mr. Masina, said that, you know, it's actually population growth that's to blame for all of this, and that the ANC had done an amazing job of providing jobs in South Africa. He talked about how, quote, in 1993, 8 million South Africans were working. Today, 18.7 million South Africans are working. However, the population has doubled from 32 million to 62 million. So there's obviously, you know, sort of something in that, right? You know, a lot of our population has grown by quite a significant amount, and a lot more people are working today in absolute terms than were in 1993. There are some important caveats, I think, though, and Chris, I want you to weigh in on this, but, you know, the ones that come to mind firstly are that employment growth is very heavily weighted towards the sort of first 10 years of ANC rule, kind of between 1998-2008 in particular, is when you saw the most economic growth and the largest number of jobs created. And then also the fact that if you compare us to other countries around the world, South Africa's population growth rate is in fact actually not that high, particularly in recent years. And secondly, many countries around the world with even greater population growth have done a much better job of reducing their employment rates. So while superficially there is some reason to kind of at least think about what the ANC spokesperson is saying here, I think it is completely misleading to make the claim that this is why we have unemployment. Chris, your thought?
Yeah, I think you're right to highlight that there could be an element to this. One shouldn't discount the effects of population growth. And also in that context, that then dealing with lots of those pressures, what does that do to state resources, infrastructure, investment, your macroeconomic policies, etc. But I think the fundamental point is, if around 2007, 2008, let's say we had about between 15, 16 million people in employment, if we're only at 18 million now, what does that do in that context? So we're not saying take 1 year in isolation, take one quarter in isolation. Over time, that's what the trend line has been. There has been an improvement since COVID, but not as much as it should have been if we had our domestic macroeconomic policies correct. If your things like reliable electricity supply, your logistics, if you'd move to beneficiation of minerals, raw materials, if you weren't just focused on exporting those sorts of things the whole time, if your construction sector worked particularly well, your manufacturing sector, mining, agriculture as well. At the moment, we've got such a focus on the financial services industry. What about employment in areas where it's more low-skilled or sort of medium-skilled that you would want to bring in more people in those areas? So, yeah, I think this is trying to shift the goalposts, as has become customary for the governing party, to try and redefine terms on their own terms that makes them look better. There was substantial progress from 94 to about 2007, 2008. But since then, things have, I think, remained pretty much the status quo. And in a growing population, even in relative terms, that then means that your average citizen, their quality of life becomes less than it was in previous years. You've got higher inflation, GDP per capita has I think, regressed in many respects. So I don't think that paints a realistic picture of the economy. It's a different colored lens of trying to make the best of a very, very bad situation.
I also think it's worth pointing out that across the entire world, pretty much, population growth is slowing, and in many cases is actually beginning to turn around and shrink. We've already seen population reductions in countries such as China and Japan, South Korea. And I think very clearly that if South Africa does not majorly reform its policy environment, if it doesn't loosen its labor regulations, if it doesn't end BEE and some of these other ideological policies that government has pursued, in 10 years, our population growth will probably be close to zero, and we'll be sitting with a similar level of unemployment unless we change the way we do things. So I think it's not worth taking this particular claim of the ANC seriously. Okay, let us move on to our last story. And this is some speculation that Eskom is looking into rolling out small modular nuclear reactors to be placed in old decommissioned coal power plants. Now, this was during a panel discussion. This is a comment made by Eskom official during a panel discussion at an energy conference in Cape Town this week. Eskom official said, in partnership with the SA Nuclear Energy Corporation, we are looking at rolling out those small modular reactors where we are closing coal power plants. Now, Chris, to me, this, I think the devil is very much in the details on this kind of thing, but to me, this sounds like an absolutely excellent thing that should definitely be investigated for its costs and for its feasibility. But if they can pull it off, I think this would do a lot of very positive things for South Africa's energy mix and energy supply. What do you make of this?
Yeah, 100%. I think it builds on more positive news in general coming out of Eskom. For example, the decision to postpone the decommissioning of three coal-fired power plants, which I think is the right call in terms of South Africa's energy mix, but also our availability of electricity. You can have your investment in more renewables over time, but I think the grid isn't set up for that sort of thing. And also, you can still run quite efficiently many of our coal-fired power stations if you ensure that maintenance is done and all that kind of thing. So this, at least the discussions around this, floating the idea, I think is a good sign. As usual, it'll break down into actual implementation. So it's one thing to have very good plans and ideas, but what are the plans around it? Can it be done or not? Who will then happen to get the contract? So you've got concerns around corruption, et cetera, et cetera. But it's good to hear more, I guess, common sense, practical proposals from government, or from Eskom at least, in this regard.
Definitely. And I think if we pursue some of these policies, I hope that if the ANC does lose power in the next couple of years, because energy provision, particularly nuclear power, can take a very long time to build and develop, even if you're going for some of the smaller reactors. There's lots of things to consider. One of the things, of course, you don't want to do is to see the similar levels of corruption and mismanagement that we've seen in the construction of our newest coal power plants. I'm a big fan of nuclear energy, but if you build them in the same way that Medupi and Kasile were built, with all of the delays, the expenses, and the incompetence, you're going to have a bad time. Maybe not, a Chernobyl bad time, but it's still going to be way too expensive and chaotic. Anyway, I think that's all the time we have for today. I hope that you found the show interesting, and that's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.